God bless you. Please take your Bibles and go to the book of Esther. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, 1 Kings, 1 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms. So if you go to Psalms and go back a book, you can find it too. So, Esther. Besides being the first day of spring, today also is the Jewish celebration of Purim. And I don't think we've ever taught on Purim here at this church since we've opened the church. So today we're going to learn about Purim. In the Bible, there are three major feasts from the Torah. When I talk about the Torah, that's the first five books. They call them the five books of Moses. In the Greek, it's the Pentateuch. It's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's the Torah. In the Torah, there are three major feasts. Maybe you're familiar with these. You have the Feast of Unleavened Bread, or Passover, the Feast of Weeks, or the Feast of the First Fruits, and the Feast of Tabernacles, or Booths, the Ingathering. In your notes, I've given you the verses about these three major feasts that are part of the Torah. Then in the Hebrew calendar, there are other feasts as well. One of the more popular feasts maybe you've heard of is Hanukkah. Now, Hanukkah is not a biblical feast. In other words, there is no record in the Bible anything about Hanukkah. Hanukkah occurred during what's called the Maccabees, the time of the Maccabean Revolt. After the Maccabean Revolt, they rededicated the temple, and they only had one day of oil, and that oil lasted for 8 days in the rededication of the temple. And this was around 165 B.C., and then in the Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, is rabbinical writings that were written down many years later, is the celebration of Hanukkah. But that's not a biblical feast, because the last book of the Bible was the book of Malachi, was around 400 B.C. So the Hanukkah occurred hundreds of years after the last final book of the Hebrew Scriptures was written. However, the celebration of Purim is a biblical feast. And we're going to look at that today. I think you're familiar with Passover because it occurs around the same time we celebrate what's called Easter. We call it Resurrection Sunday here at our church. And I think most of you know that that is on, I don't know if most of you know or not, but it's the first month of the Hebrew calendar is called Nisan, which occurs in the spring. And the Feast of Passover and then the subsequent Feast of Unleavened Bread starts on the 15th of Nisan. This year it's going to be on April 19th. We're going to start our Berean class on Isaiah, so put that on your calendar. But anyways, that is the first of the month. The last month of the Hebrew calendar is Adar. Adar, the 12th month. Now the Hebrew calendar is a lunar calendar. In other words, it goes with the moon. So when there's a new moon, the new calendar starts. And these feasts on the 15th, the 14th, and 15th are actually the moon in its full cycle. So there should be a full moon out last night and tonight because that's when these feasts take place. And this was on the 14th of the Hebrew calendar Adar. In this year, 2011, the 14th of Adar started last night at sunset and goes through today. So today is Purim. So what is this about? Well, you learn about this in the book of Esther. And we're going to look at this today. Esther chapter 1. It says, now, it took place. Chapter 1, verse 1. Now, it took place in the days of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. In those days, as King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne, which was at the citadel in Susa. Ahasuerus is most likely the king Xerxes. Xerxes is the Greek name for this king. Ahasuerus would be his Persian name. Ahasuerus, or most commonly known historically as Xerxes. And he was the king who ruled the Persian Empire from 486 to 465 BC. One of the times of the Persian Empire was in its when it's big. And it tells you how big this empire was. It went from India to Ethiopia. And actually the word Ethiopia is Kush, which represents Egypt. Or not Kush, not Egypt, but Africa. Nor that whole section of Africa is this section of Kush. So isn't it ironic that today, how much is centered around this part of the country? Afghanistan, Egypt, Libya, Israel, Iran, Iraq. That is what this kingdom of the Persian Empire encompassed. What we call today the Middle East. And we were talking about this at our Berean Fellowship the other night. How much, why is such a big deal about this part of the world? I don't think it's coincidence. I don't think things just happen. And I think you'll enjoy this story today. Of this happened in a Persian Empire of this part of the world around 465, between 486 and 465 B.C. When King Ahasuerus ruled over all these nations, 127 provinces in that part of the world that his kingdom was over. And he was in the citadel of Susa. Now, Susa was the capital city of Persia. Today, it is the city called Shush, S-H-U-S-H, Shush, which is in Iran. Iran was the capital area of the Persian Empire, what today is Iran. At this time, the Jewish people, all the people of Jews, had been, Israel was defeated. They had been dispersed under Nebuchadnezzar. And now the Jewish people lived throughout this kingdom, all over. They were dispersed throughout the Persian Empire. So all these areas that we call the Mideast today, all on all sections of it, the Persian Empire ruled, and the Jewish people as slaves were dispersed throughout this kingdom of Ahasuerus. And that's the setting to which the book of Esther is written. The Jewish people are slaves. They are in captivity under the Persians. Now, I'm not going to read all this. We'll read a lot of Esther today, but I'm not going to read everything to save time. But in these first two chapters, it really sets the story for the rest of the book. King Ahasuerus has a royal banquet in celebration of his exploits, of his grandeur, of his kingdom. He has a royal banquet to display his great accomplishments. And on the seventh day of this banquet, he summoned his queen, Vashti, to come before his presence so that he could display her beauty before the people. Now, Queen Vashti, she was a women's liver. She refused to come before the king. And the king didn't think too highly of this, and neither did his advisors. And so she was released of her royal position by King Ahasuerus. And after this, Ahasuerus appointed overseers in his kingdom to find young women that might become queen in place of Vashti. Finally, after a nationwide search throughout all 127 provinces, one woman was selected, and it was the young Jewish woman, Esther, who found favor in the king's sight, and she became queen. Now, Esther, her ancestors had been brought into captivity during the time of King Nebuchadnezzar when they were exiled with the Jewish king Jeconiah. Now, about 100 years later, she's living in captivity in Persia. Evidently, Esther's parents both died. I don't know how old she was when they died, but she was probably very young. As a result, Esther was raised by her cousin, Mordecai. Mordecai must have been older than her, and he raised Esther in this captivity in Persia. He was like his daughter, although actually they were cousins. Esther was a Jew, But Ahasuerus and his people did not know her background. They didn't know that she was a Jew. Now, in the Bible, there's several records. I don't know if you're familiar, where in captivity, God's people prospered. Or people who believed and walked with God did great things. Joseph, remember, Joseph was a prisoner in Egypt, and he rose up to be second to Pharaoh. The man Daniel, was brought into captivity in Babylon and became one of the great men of the kingdom of Babylon. And here in Persia, Esther and Mordecai also became great in a foreign nation. And that's really what this story is about. Esther 2, verse 17 says, "The king loved Esther more than all the women, and she found favor and kindness with him more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his princes and his servants. He also made a holiday for the provinces and gave gifts according to the king's bounty. When the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Esther had not yet made known her kindred or her people, even as Mordecai had commanded her. For Esther did what Mordecai told her, as she had done when under his care." So Mordecai was like her father, in a sense. And she always was obedient to Mordecai. And he said, you know, don't tell anybody right now about your background. You just be queen. And that's what happens. Now, verse 21, there's just a little story that becomes important later on. "In those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's officials from those who guarded the door, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. But the plot became known to Mordecai, and he told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. Now, when the plot was investigated and found to be so, they were both hanged on the gallows, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the king's presence." So what you had, there was a conspiracy against King Ahasuerus. Mordecai found out about it, and he says, hey, Esther, you better tell the king there's a plot for his life. And so they caught these guys, they killed them, and then they wrote in their chronicles about this event that Mordecai had done and how he helped the king. Just happened, set it on the side, put it in the books. Then we move on with the story. After these events, now the music, if you had music, it'd be dun, 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 dun. King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and established his authority over all the princes who were with him. And the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage. So Haman, you'll see, was a little into himself. He kind of appreciated his position, and he wanted everybody to bow before him. Now Mordecai, being a Jew, following the Ten Commandments, knew he wasn't supposed to bow. And he didn't. Let's see what happens. Then verse 3, "The king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, 'Why are you transgressing the king's command?' Now when they had spoken daily to him, and he would not listen to them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's reason would stand. For he had told them that he was a Jew." He said, the reason I don't bow is because I am a Jew, who, even though I live in the country of Persia, I follow my God. And I'm not supposed to bow. And I'm not bowing to that man. That's what he said. Verse 5, "When Haman saw that Mordecai neither bowed nor paid homage to him, Haman was filled with rage." Ho, what? You're not going to bow to me? Do you know who I am? I'm Haman. All right? Now watch how angry he was. "But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him who the people of Mordecai were. Therefore, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. He not only wanted to take out Mordecai, he was so upset, he said, we're taking out the Jews. Every single one of them in the kingdom. This is, you ever heard of anybody wanting to do that before? To destroy, to genocide a whole nation of people. Out of what? Out of hate. And that's what Haman wanted to do. He said, I want to kill them all. Forget, not just Mordecai, we're killing all of them. Verse 7. In the first month, which is the month Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, Pur, that is the lot, was cast before Haman from day to day, from month to month, until the 12th month, that is the month Adar. Now, what does this mean? The word Purim that we're celebrating, that's celebrated today, comes from this word pure that we're reading here. The pure. Or the lots. Now what does that mean? Have you guys heard in the Bible the term casting lots? It's used actually quite often. And one of these days I would love to just do a research paper on the whole idea of casting lots. Because it's really quite an interesting part of the Bible that we don't think about. We read it, but we don't really think that much about it. Let me give you some biblical examples of casting lots. When they had to make a really important decision in the law, they would come to the high priest. And have you ever heard of the Urim and the Thummim? And what these were stones. Like some were black and some were white. I don't know exactly. That's what I mean. I'd like to study this more. But what they would do is when they needed to make a decision, the high priest would throw these down. And however they came out, that would give him direction as to what the answer was. This is in the law. This is a type of casting lots. It's where you throw it to chance. You throw it out there. Remember Jesus when he was on the cross? The Roman soldiers, they cast lots so they could decide who was going to take his clothing, who's going to get his raiment. Remember after Judas died, the first chapter of the book of Acts, Judas died and the disciples said, we need to pick somebody to replace Judas. What are we going to do? They narrowed it down to two guys and they said, well, who do we pick? And what they did is they cast lots to determine who was going to replace Judas, and it ended up being Matthias. That was done through casting lots. To explain it today, maybe in our terms, we might say they rolled the dice. Like in this instance, he was trying to pick what month and day when he was going to annihilate the people. So like say you had dice, I don't know what it was, what he did here, but you roll the dice and you get double sixes, 12, 12th month. Again, I don't know exactly how he cast lots here to determine it, but that's casting lots. Another way of casting, you ever do this with someone where you got to make a choice who's going to do something, and you do the odd and even thing? One, two, three, you know, one guy does this, and if it's even, you go one way. If it's odd, the other guy wins, right? You ever do that? Cast lots. Come on, three times. Do it again, right? Because you didn't get what you wanted, right? Cast lots. A coin flip, that's how we start football games. Who determines how you're going to start? We'll leave it to chance. Flip it up. Right? Right? Just like the guy in Dark Knight, right? Two-Face there. Lawyer there. Anyway, never mind. He flips a coin to decide the fate of what. That's the type of casting lots. Another way, maybe you cast lots, you ever draw straws? That's the type of casting lots, where who got the short straw, shorter than the stick. Anyways, this lots is the word pure. So the way that it was determined when they're going to annihilate people was left to chance. And in the Eastern mind, casting lots is spiritual. In their mind, you are leaving it to divine providence. You are leaving this whole event to the hand of God. And that's what Haman did here. He cast lots as to when he's going to annihilate the Jewish people. And that's pure, was this casting of lots. Let's see how it works out for Haman. Then Haman said to Ahasuerus, "There is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces in your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of all people, and they do not observe the king's laws. So it is not in the king's interest to let them remain. If it is pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who carry on the king's business to put into the king's treasuries." Then the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. The king said to Haman, "The silver is yours, and the people also, do with them as you please." Then the king's scribes were summoned on the 13th day of the first month, as it was written, just as Haman commanded, to the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, and the princes of each people, each province according to the script, each people according to its language, being written in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed with the king's signet ring. So what happened here? Haman must have been a little wealthy too. Had a little bit of money. He paid 10,000 pieces, 10,000 talents of silver. Now, I have no idea how much this is, and it's really difficult to figure out money worth, because really, money changes with economy, right? A dollar today doesn't buy what a dollar bought 50 years ago. So the question is, how much does 10,000 pieces of silver buy? How much 10 talents of silver buy? I don't know. At the time of Jesus Christ, 30 pieces of silver they sold, right, was paid to Judas. And then you remember what they did with that 30 pieces of silver? They bought a plot of land. So 30 pieces of silver was enough to purchase a plot of land. What's 10,000 talents of silver valued at? It's a lot of money. So here he uses his money to buy off the king to do his political agenda. Huh. Ever heard of that before? Paying off a government official using your lobby and your ability to get your agenda done. Huh. Not a lot new under the sun, is there? That's what's going on. He pays the king to kill an entire race of people. That's what's going on. Letters were sent to the couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy and to kill and annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, is the month Adar, to seize their possessions as plunder. A copy of the edict is to be issued as law in every province, which was published to all the people so that they should be ready for this day. The couriers went out impelled by the king's command while the decree was issued at the citadel in Susa. And while the king and Haman sat down to drink, the city of Susa was in confusion. You have here a man filled with pride, filled with hate for a race of people. And he wants to annihilate the Jews. Huh. Gee, seems like I've heard of a prideful, crazy leader in Iran today that wants to annihilate the Jews. Do you think maybe we would once in our lifetime wake up and realize that the Bible is true? The same thing goes on day after day, year after year, in the same part of the world. Over what? If you look at it from a natural point of view, it's absolutely crazy. But life is spiritual, and our God is a spiritual God who has laid down for us history of the past and history of what's going to happen in the future. And whether people want to believe it or they don't want to believe it really doesn't make a lot of difference. Because what God said was, what he said is, and what he said is going to be. And the same thing that happened back then is still in the hearts and the minds of the Iranian leaders today. Is this coincidence? I don't think so. I think what we read in the Bible should just electrify us. And if people cannot see this, they're blind. They're blind and they're deaf. When the truth is set out, I mean, we talk about this in our Berean Fellowship almost every week. Like, oh my gosh, look what it says. It's just right there. For anybody that wants to see and know, you can know the truth. And you can know where the world's heading. And you can know where our hope is. And that's why we have a message to proclaim. But here, in this time, 465 to 49 BC, there was this plot to annihilate a race of people. Verse 4, chapter 4. Now, what do the believers do? The disciples, those who believe in the God of Abraham, what do? When Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the midst of the city and wailed loudly and bitterly. He went as far as the king's gate, for no one was to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. In each and every province where the command and decree of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, wailing, and many lay on sackcloth and ashes. Then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her and the queen, writhed in great anguish. And she sent garments to clothe Mordecai that he might remove his sackcloth from him, but he did not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hekath from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. So Hathach went to Mordecai to the city square in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened to him, and the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict, which had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show Esther and inform her, and to order her to go into the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for her people. Hathach came back and related Mordecai's words to Esther. So what Mordecai, remember, she'd always obeyed Mordecai. And Mordecai says, I want you to go to the king. And I want you to plead for our people. Plead for the Jewish people before King Ahasuerus. Verse 10, and Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's province know that for any man or woman who comes to the king, to the inner court, who is not summoned, he has but one law, and that is to be put to death. Unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. They related Esther's words to Mordecai. She said, make sure Mordecai knows what he's asking. Because according to the law of the Persians, unless I'm summoned by the king, even though I'm queen, if I'm not summoned, and if I go before him and he does not put out the golden scepter before me, I will be put to death. That was the law of the Persians. And this king was known to throw out queens before. It's not like he had a problem with that. And so she said, just make sure Mordecai understands what he's asking. Verse 13, and Mordecai told them to reply to Esther. Do not imagine that you, in the king's palace, can escape any more than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. Esther, why has God blessed you? Why has he put you as queen? Maybe this is your time. Maybe this is why he has done for you what he's done for you. Maybe it's this very reason why you are at this time in this place of your life. For God's purpose. What about you? Why are you where you are right now? You think everything's coincidence? For the things God has blessed you with, why has he blessed you with it? You see, I think people of faith believe in God's direction. They believe in God's calling. And they walk with confidence in that. And Esther told them to reply this to Mordecai, verse 16. Go, assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. And do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. And I and my maidens will also fast in the same way. And thus I will go to the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and did just as Esther had commanded him. That's a person of faith. Who said, this is it. I'll put it on the line. And if I die, I die. But I'm going to die doing what I believe God's called me to do. I'm going to walk according to God's word. Each and every one of us, do you have a conviction in your heart when the time comes for you to say, yes, Lord? Are you willing to say, yes, Lord? You know, every one of us through our life, at some time, you are going to be confronted with your faith. Maybe it's you got to tell people that you're a Christian, that you believe in the Bible. Maybe it's just carrying your Bible to where people see you with it. Maybe you doing that is going to cause you ridicule. Maybe you will lose a job over it. Maybe you'll lose a sale at work. And sometime maybe you will lose your life. Jesus said, if you're not willing to confess me before men, I'm not going to confess you before my Father. Are you willing to put your faith on the line? To stand and say, yes, Lord. I will do what you want. Esther did. That, to me, is the real essence of faith in this record, was Esther's decision to walk with faith. So, it came about on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace in the front of the king's room, and the king was sitting on his royal throne in the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. When the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, she obtained favor in her sight, and the king extended to Esther the golden scepter, which was in his hand. Praise God. If he didn't do that, but he put forth the golden scepter. And Esther came near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, what is troubling you, Queen Esther? And what is your request? Even to the half of the kingdom it shall be given to you. Esther said, now she has great wisdom as she says she does this. If it pleases the king, may the king and Haman come this day to the banquet that I have prepared for them. Then the king said, bring Haman quickly that he may do as Esther desires. So the king and Haman came to the banquet which Esther had prepared. As they drank their wine at the banquet, king said to Esther, what is your petition? For it shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even half of the kingdom it shall be done. And Esther replied, my petition and my request is if I have found favor in the sight of the king. And if it pleases the king to grant my petition and to do what I request, may the king and Haman come to the banquet which I prepare for them. And tomorrow I will do as the king says. So she says, I want to have you and Haman together in a little meal. Can we do that? Then Haman went out. Now, this is Haman. Oh, Queen Esther wants me. Look at this. And Haman went out that day glad and pleased to his heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he did not stand up or tremble before him, Haman was filled with anger against Mordecai. Haman controlled himself, however, and went to his house and sent for his friends and his wife Zereth. And Haman recounted to them the glory of his riches, the number of his sons, every instance where the king had magnified him, and how he had been promoted above the princes and servants of the king. And Haman said, even Esther, the queen, even Esther, the queen, let no one but me She let me come with the king to the banquet, which she prepared. And tomorrow I'm invited by her with the king. Just the three of us. Woo! Haman said, and even as Esther the queen, let no one but come. Verse 13. Yet all this does not satisfy me every time I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Hear all this great stuff. But, oh, I hate that Mordecai. Here I am having a good time. The queen wants me. The king wants me. And then I got to look at Mordecai. Ugh. Then Zareth, his wife, and all his friends said to him, have a gallows 50 cubits high made. In the morning, ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on it. Then go joyfully with the king to the banquet. And the advice pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. Said, all right, you know what? Build a gallows and have Mordecai hung. Hang him tomorrow. So tomorrow, go to the king and tell him you want to have this Mordecai hanged, and he'll hang him, and then he's over with. Haman's like, that's a good idea. All right, we'll make these gallows. Tomorrow I'll go see the king. Verse chapter 6. During the night, the king could not sleep. Wonder who's working this little thought out. So he gave an order to bring the books of record, the chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found that Mordecai had reported concerning Bigthana and Tereshi, two of the king's eunuchs who were doorkeepers, that they sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, what honor or dignity has been bestowed upon Mordecai for this? And the king's servant who attended him said, nothing's been done for him. And so the king, here's what's going on. All right. Mordecai is going to the king Haman is going to go to the king to petition to get Mordecai hung. He has these gallows thing. He's going to hang him on the gallows. He's going to the king to ask him to get Mordecai killed, right? In that night, the king, I don't know if he has a dream, but he can't sleep. And he goes, give me the books. What? How come nobody ever did anything for this man? He did this. He saved my life. What's been done for him? Nothing's been done for him. He's like, what are we going to do? What am I going to do what should be honored for Mordecai? He really needs to be honored. What should we do for him? So this is what's setting up, all right? So the king says, verse 4, who's in the court? Now Haman had just entered in the outer court of the king's order to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows which he had prepared for him. He's coming in to tell the king he wants to hang the guy that he just wants to honor. This is great. So Haman came to the king, and the king says to Haman, what should be done for the man whom the king desires to honor? What would you do for a guy that I want to honor? What should I do for him? And Haman says to himself, thinking to himself, whom would the king want to honor but besides me? Well, he's like, oh, man, he's going to honor me. All right, what should be done for him? Okay, I'll tell you what you should do, king. And Haman said to the king, for the man whom the king desires to honor, let him bring a royal robe which the king has worn, and the horse on which the king has ridden, and whose head a royal crown has been placed, and let the robe and the horse be handed over to the one of the king's most noble princes, and let them array the man in whom the king desires to honor, and lead him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor. He says, that's what you should do for the guy. Put a royal crown, put a crown on his head, put him on a horse, have the princes lead him around and say, this is who the king wants to honor. That's what you should do, king. This is great. And the king says to Haman, take quickly the robes. That's a good idea. I like that. Take quickly the robes and the horse, if you had said, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who is sitting at the king's gate. Do not fall short in anything that you have said. And then Haman has to go around the city leading the horse with Mordecai on it and saying, this is who the king wants to honor. Oh. Talk about God turning lemons into lemonade, right? So, that's great. So now Haman realizes he's in trouble. So he's going to have to plead to Esther. So he wants to use this meal to kind of now plead for his cause, because he knows this isn't looking good for me now. Verse 7, now King and Haman came to drink wine with Esther the queen. And the queen said to Esther on the second day, also as they drank their wine at the banquet, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to the half of the kingdom it shall be done. And Queen Esther replied, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me as a petition and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Now, if we had only been sold as slaves, men and women, I would not have remained silent, for the trouble would not be commensurate with the annoyance to the king. Then King Ahasuerus said to the queen Esther, who is he? Where is he? Who would presume to do this? She says, king, you know, if it was just that we were sold into slavery, but there's this plan to annihilate all my people. King Ahasuerus says, who? Who wants to do this? You tell me who it is. Esther said, the guy sitting with us here, the foe and enemy of this wicked Haman. Then Haman became terrified before the king and the queen. And the king rose. I mean, he was upset. He's in this meal. Here's this guy who wants to kill his queen and the Jews. This Mordecai who just honored. He runs out and he's furious. He goes out of the room. He rose up and drinking wine went into the palace of the garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther. For he saw that harm had been determined against him by the king. So now he goes to Esther. He says, oh, Esther, help me, help me, help me, Esther, help me. Now, when the king returned from the palace garden and the place where they were drinking wine, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. Not a good place to be, Haman. And the king said, what? Will he insult the queen with me in the house? As the words went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbonah, one of the eunuchs who were before the king, said, behold, indeed, the gallows standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king. And the king said, hang him on it. So they hanged Haman on the gallows, which he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided. Whew, what a thing. Now, go to the last chapter, chapter 9. So now what happens is he takes the signet ring off Haman and he gives it to Mordecai. And Mordecai became second in command in the Persian Empire to Ahasuerus. It's very similar to Joseph being second in command to Pharaoh in Egypt. Mordecai became second in command to Ahasuerus in the Persian Empire. And then also what happens is on that day that they cast lots for Pur, that they were going to annihilate all the Jews, the Jews were allowed to annihilate their enemies on that same day. And direct opposite. Did a 180. Is that what that is? A 180? Happened for the Jewish people on that day. And in verse 17, it says, this was done on the 13th day of the month Adar. On the 14th day they rested and made it a day of feasting and rejoicing. But the Jews who were in Susa assembled on the 13th and the 14th day of the same month, and they rested on the 15th day and made it a day of feasting and rejoicing. Therefore the Jews of the rural area who live in the rural towns make the 14th day of the month Adar a holiday for rejoicing and feasting and sending portions of food to one another. And then it says in verse 26, that was the first celebration of Purim. Therefore, they call these days Purim after the name of Pur. And because of the instructions in this letter, both what they had seen in regard and what had happened to them, the Jews established and made a custom for themselves and for the descendants and for all those who allied themselves with them, so that they would not fail to celebrate these 2 days according to their regulation and according to their appointed times annually. And so these days were to be remembered and celebrated throughout every generation, every family, every province, every city. And these days of Purim were not to fail from among the Jews on their memory fade from their descendants. Then Queen Esther, daughter of Abel, whom Mordecai the Jew wrote with full authority to confirm the second letter about Purim, he sent letters to all the Jews, to the 127 provinces in the kingdom of Ahasuerus, namely the word of peace and truth, to establish these days of Purim as their appointed times, just as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had established for them, and just as they established for themselves and for their descendants and instructions for their times of fasting and their lamentations. The command of Esther established these customs for Purim, and it was written in the book. And that is what today was a celebration of. It's what Purim is all about. And actually, on this celebration, more than any of the other Jewish celebration, is a day they send gifts. It's a day they send food. And we were talking about this, and we didn't want to do it this year because we really felt like we don't know that much about it. So that's one of the reasons I'm teaching. We're just teaching. But we thought next year, maybe we'll do a little Purim at the church here. And rather than doing gifts, you know, the other celebrations really aren't gift. This was a gift-giving holiday. And maybe next year, this time of year, we'll do our own gift-giving holiday here at Purim and make it more of a celebration. But that's a little bit about today. And really my encouragement for you this week is, maybe God has you where you're supposed to be. And are you going to say yes, Lord? Absolutely. When he requires it of you. Are you going to walk with faith today? So Heavenly Father, thank you for your goodness. God, thank you that we don't have to be cast down and destroyed, but Lord, that we can walk and have trust in you. God, thank you for the greatness of your word. What wonderful records we have to account and to remember, and that we can take that with us this week, that we can walk like Mordecai and Esther, God, that we can stand above the elements of this world and live for you in spite of any negativity that's around us, that we can walk and talk with you this day. Thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.